Hey, fellow Okies and all true crime enthusiasts, Cece here, and I'm the host, writer, and producer of this, the Sooner State True Crime Podcast. Welcome, y'all, to our seventh episode of the show, The Sunday School Murderers. In 2001, Brenda Andrew struck up an affair with her fellow Sunday school teacher, James Pavott. Her husband, Rob Andrew, would soon be shot dead, attempting to pick up his two children for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. Eventually, Brenda Andrew and James Pavott would both be convicted of the first-degree murder of Rob Andrew, and both were sentenced to death for the murder. This is a twisted tale of lust, betrayal, and a senseless yet brutal murder of a devoted father and family man, for nothing more than greed. Please leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts, and be sure y'all subscribe in whatever podcast app y'all prefer, so you never miss a new upcoming episode. Also, follow us on Twitter at Crime State, or check out our Facebook and Instagram, OK Crime State, or visit our website, crimestatepod.com. Be sure you click the inner main page link while we're building the site, or visit the show notes for links to everything, including the sources for this episode. As always, please send me your comments and case suggestions to soonerstatecrimepod@gmail.com. And to continue receiving new free content, please donate to the tip jar by visiting paypal.me/crimestate. You'll receive a shout out and a handwritten thank you note. Thank y'all so much for listening. The response to the podcast has been truly humbling, and I'm very grateful. Thank you to Podcorn and the Dating Confessions with Alicia and Jack podcast for sponsoring this episode. I think that's everything. So now, come away with me to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in the Landsbrook neighborhood, in November 2001, where the following Sunday school teachers murdered a loving and devoted husband and father. Robert Dell Andrew was born on September 19, 1962, in Enid, Oklahoma. His parents, E.R. and Lou Ellen, welcomed Rob into the family, along with his three brothers, Bill, Tim, and Tom Andrew. Rob graduated in 1980 from Chisholm High School in Enid. After graduation, Rob attended Oklahoma State University, where he earned a bachelor's degree in advertising and a minor in marketing in 1984. Rob is described as a loving son and a devoted husband and father. He loved to let his children beat him playing Nintendo games. He was also very devoted to his Christian faith and served as a deacon at the North Point Baptist Church in Oklahoma City. Rob was a marketing professional that served as a senior vice president at Jordan Associates Advertising from 1984 until his death in 2001. He was also a sought-after public speaker and earned numerous national industry awards. Brenda Evers was born on December 16, 1963, in Enid, Oklahoma. She grew up in a conservative Lutheran Christian family, but it seemed to be an ideal childhood. Her sister, Kimberly Bullen, told Snap TV show, quote, "We both went to Lutheran grade school, went to a lot of youth group activities. Brenda was a good student, and she earned straight A's. In junior high, Brenda took up baton twirling, and while attending high school, she would go to all the football games, but unlike many of her friends, she would skip the after party and go home instead. Brenda did not smoke, drink, or use any drugs. Her friends later described her as a shy, quiet girl that spent most of her time at church or helping others. While Rob was attending Oklahoma State University and Brenda was still a senior in high school, the two met through Rob's younger brother at the swimming pool. Brenda's sister Kimberly said, quote, "I think their values were pretty much the same, even though he was a Baptist and she was Lutheran. In their religious views, they were a lot alike. After Brenda graduated from high school, she enrolled at college in Winfield, Kansas, for only a year, before transferring to OSU to be closer to Rob. The couple were married on June 2, 1984, right before Brenda graduated from college. They lived together in Oklahoma City until Rob accepted a new position in Texas. After the couple lived in Texas for a few years, Rob began missing home, but Brenda was happy to be out of state. She had a job she liked in the banking industry, and she had created solid friendships she valued. Cracks in the Andrew marriage began to appear when Rob accepted a position back in Oklahoma City. Brenda actually stayed living in Texas, separating the couple for several months after Rob moved back. Despite those troubles, the couple welcomed their first child, Trina, on December 23, 1990. At that time, Brenda became a stay-at-home mother. Brenda's sister stated, quote, "She really, really enjoyed working in the bank. But when they started having children, being a mom and being there to raise her kids was top priority." 4 years later, despite the marriage being deeply troubled, the couple welcomed their second child, Paul, and I'm not using the kids' real names. By 2001, Rob began to confide in his pastor and friends about his failing marriage to Brenda. Reports of verbal abuse by Brenda towards Rob later emerged, saying she would tell her husband she hated him and the marriage was a mistake. Rob tried to hold on to Brenda and continued to hold the hope the couple would work out any issues and save their 17-year marriage. Rob, unfortunately, was dead wrong. Beginning in 1994, the normally shy and conservative Brenda began wearing more revealing clothing, and her demeanor started changing as well. By the time Brenda was almost 40, she started to have what was described as a midlife crisis. There are reports she engaged in multiple affairs, beginning in 1997 with a friend's husband, and in 1999 with a man she met at the grocery store. Brenda continued the affair with the grocery store man until 2001. That is, until she met a fellow Sunday school teacher at church named James Pavott. Shortly after, the two began an affair that would prove fatal. Little is known about James Pavott's early life, except that he was in the Air Force and served in Southeast Asia. He was linked to the military police as well. And until the summer of 2001, he had been married for 9 years to Sukhai Pavott. When he met Brenda, James was working for Prudential Insurance, selling life insurance policies. His former co-workers described Pavott as cold and manipulative, one even stating there was something about Pavott that was, quote, off-center. The co-worker also said, quote, "He always talked about shooting dogs. Every time he would see a dog, he would talk about shooting it." But James's wife noticed the change in Pavott once he became involved with Brenda. She stated, quote, "He wasn't the same Jim I had known for 9 years. He was the most kind person while we were married. Something was not right with him." Eventually, Brenda and Rob Andrews separated, and Rob rented an apartment close to the family home. On October 3rd, 2001, Brenda filed for divorce from Rob. Then, on October 25th, 2001, the brake lines to Rob Andrews' vehicle were cut. The next day, Rob received two calls stating his wife had been in an accident and that he needed to hurry to a Norman, Oklahoma hospital. The first call Rob received was from a male voice, and the second from a female. Later, James Pavott's own adult daughter would tell police her father persuaded her to make that call to Rob. In addition, the following day, Brenda mentioned to her husband that she had heard about the brakes being cut from the newspaper. However, there was no media coverage of the event. Despite their efforts, Rob luckily discovered the damage to his vehicle before anything could occur. He then filed a police report over the incident. He told police he thought his wife and his friend and insurance salesman, James Pavott, were having a relationship. He also reported his suspicions that the pair were responsible for the brakes being cut. In addition to the police report, Rob contacted Pavat about removing Brenda as the beneficiary of his life insurance policy. Pavat, however, lied to Rob by telling him his wife was the, quote, owner of his policy and that there was nothing he could do to change it. After Rob learned more about the possible plot against him, on November 2, 2001, he filed another, more explicit police report, stating he thought his wife and former friend were conspiring to kill him and take his $800,000 life insurance policy proceeds for themselves. This realization must have been difficult for Rob to admit. He had still been holding out hope he and Brenda would reconcile. In his prayer journal, dated November 12, 2001, Rob wrote, quote, I am in great pain. I know if I face these problems and allow God to work, he will show me a way of escape. On the day just prior to the murder, Rob provided the police with a cassette tape of the two phone calls he received back in October, urging him to drive on the highway with cut brakes. In a poignant prayer journal entry, Rob wrote on November 19, 2001, quote, I have faith in God. I should walk with the assurance of things I hope for, a relationship with my kids, a loving wife, a home that worships, laughs, and plays and loves. On November 20th, 2001, Rob Andrew went to the family home he had shared with his wife in order to pick up the couple's two children for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. The normal process for this transfer was Brenda would bring the kids out to the driveway, where Rob would take it from there. But on this fateful evening, Brenda asked Rob if he would look at the furnace pilot light. Prosecutors believe when Rob bent down to look, James Pavat shot him in the torso with a 16-gauge shotgun. In vain, Rob grabbed a bag of empty cans in a feeble attempt to protect himself. Then, Brenda took the shotgun and proceeded to shoot Rob a second time, close to his neck. Rob likely died instantly, but he did lose a large amount of blood. Brenda and James needed her to look like a victim as well. The couple also had a .22 caliber pistol, and Brenda shot herself superficially in the upper left arm. Brenda then called 911. She stated, quote, I've been shot. My husband and I, we've been shot. Paramedics and police rushed to the Andrew home. They found Rob laying on his back, bleeding profusely with two gunshot wounds. Brenda told police that two masked men had entered the garage, attacked and then shot her estranged husband twice. She claimed the second gunman shot her with the pistol as they fled. The Andrews' two children, 11 and 7 at the time, were found unharmed, watching TV in a bedroom with the volume up very high. They were luckily unaware of the shooting and turmoil below. Police on the scene also noticed the kids didn't have anything packed or seemed to be ready to leave for a weekend trip either. Police on scene also noticed there was nothing missing from the Andrew home. They also found no evidence of any masked men. Brenda was taken to the hospital for her gunshot wound. Witnesses from the hospital told police Brenda's demeanor just seemed too calm for someone who had just witnessed their husband being shot to death and being shot herself. Investigators quickly discovered the affair between Mrs. Andrew and her husband's life insurance salesman. Rob's friends also expressed to police his suspicions about his wife and his fear for his life leading up to the murder. The funeral for Rob Andrew was held on November 26, 2001. And if anyone doubted Brenda's involvement, they were definitely proved wrong when she and the Andrew kids did not show up for the funeral. Police went to arrest Brenda Andrew, but she and James Pavat had taken the children and fled. They were officially on the run. Shortly after, investigators discovered Mexican tourist visas were issued for James Pavat and the two Andrew kids. Also, on November 26, 2001, someone attempted to use Pavot's bank card at an ATM in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. Then, on November 29, 2001, Oklahoma County prosecutors filed first-degree murder charges against Brenda Andrew and James Pavot for the murder of Rob Andrew. The same day, Rob's parents, E.R. and Lou Ellen Andrew, filed for guardianship of the kids. The following day, federal authorities filed a legal flight to avoid prosecution charges against the pair. The FBI issued a reward for any information leading to the whereabouts and arrest of the accused murderers. Eventually, on February 23, 2002, Brenda and Pavot were out of money, and they attempted to cross back over into the United States. The border agent recognized the suspects, and they were arrested in Texas. They were eventually extradited back to Oklahoma to stand trial. Police investigating the murder of Rob Andrew took into account Brenda's story, but it was not long before they focused on her. The Andrew home showed no signs of forced entry or any additional people, such as the supposed masked intruders, entering the home. Police also could not initially identify any motive for someone to come shoot and kill Rob because there was nothing missing from the garage or house. At the crime scene, investigators found a spent 16-gauge shotgun shell inside the garage. It was on top of a van parked inside. They also recovered a .22 caliber bullet from the garage wall that was apparently fired at Brenda. Police also found Rob's blood spatter on Brenda's pant leg, proving she was the one that did the fatal shot. Besides the casing, bullet, and blood, there was no more physical evidence located at the scene. No other fingerprints, no DNA. But the circumstantial evidence was overwhelming. Police were made aware of the relationship between Brenda and Pavot prior to the murder, due to Rob's police reports surrounding his breaks. Police were also told the pair had even been asked to stop teaching Sunday school together by other church members, due to their unchristian behavior. They learned that Rob, Brenda, and James had spent time together as friends, along with the Andrew children, despite the affair raging on. That is when Pavot sold Rob an $800,000 life insurance policy. The state found evidence that Brenda and Pavot had attempted to transfer ownership of Rob's life insurance policy by forging his signature as far back as March 2001. The state also had a handwriting expert testify that Rob's signature was forged on insurance papers, naming Brenda the beneficiary. In addition, Rob made two reports to police prior to his murder regarding the attempts on his life and his suspicions about his life insurance. Despite his report about his wife and former friend, Oklahoma City Police Department Sergeant Chris Cunningham said they had no reason at the time to suspect Brenda or to put her under surveillance. In addition, just days before the murder, Rob and Brenda attended a custody hearing in which he allowed her to gain custody of their kids. Brenda's defense attorney stated, quote, "I don't believe he would have allowed someone he thought was conspiring to kill him have those children." The day before the murder, Brenda told another mother, Cynthia Balding, that she hated Rob, and the woman stated, quote, "I was shocked the way she said she hated him." Search warrants for the Andrew home produced microcassette answering machine tapes, insurance documents, financial papers, and a few handwritten notes. But one item stood out to investigators. It was a book titled 203 Ways to Drive a Man Crazy in Bed. Investigators quickly discovered that Rob Andrew actually owned a 16-gauge shotgun, just like the murder weapon. They were told by Rob's friends that Brenda had refused to allow him to take it with him when he moved out. Police searched the Andrew home, but they have never located the shotgun. A witness also came forward to police about how they saw Brenda at a shooting range in rural Garfield County 8 days before the murder. Investigators were later able to locate 16-gauge shotgun shells at the same range. The investigation also revealed that about a week before the murder, James Pavott had purchased a .22 caliber pistol. Police also searched Pavott's apartment for evidence. They found a name change document, a black book containing a list of weapons and ammo, as well as two .22 caliber bullets. Shortly after the murder, police were notified by the Andrews neighbors about additional evidence located inside their home. The day of the murder, the neighbors were out of town. Upon their return, they discovered a broken shoe rack hidden under a bed. In the same room, there was also evidence that someone had entered their attic via an opening in a bedroom closet. A spent 16-gauge shotgun shell was located on the bedroom floor. In addition, several .22 caliber bullets were found in the attic. There were no signs of forced entry, which led police to link the evidence to Brenda and Pavott, because the neighbors left a key with Andrew. The neighbor's son even entered the home to check the mail, and Pavott was prepared to shoot him if found. Luckily, the son never saw Pavott inside the home. Brenda had asked James to kill her husband in October of 2001. Pavott confided to his adult daughter, Jana Larson, about Brenda's deadly request. The day of the murder, he told his daughter not to tell anyone that Brenda had asked him to kill Rob, and he even threatened to kill his own daughter if she told anyone. He also asked to borrow Jana's car the day of the murder, offering to get it serviced. She noticed when he returned the vehicle, it had not been serviced, and she located a .22 caliber bullet inside. Her father even told Jana to throw the bullet away. The .22 caliber bullets located at the neighbor's home and in Jana's car were the same brand. They were also consistent with the bullet Brenda was shot with. All the bullets found were also consistent with the .22 caliber gun Pavott had purchased. Following the murder, Pavott added his daughter to his bank account and asked her to move his belongings from his apartment. Jana also told police that after the murder, her father and Brenda asked her to help create a document with Rob's Ford signature, stating that children could travel with Brenda out of country. Brenda also asked Larson if she transferred money into Jana's account, would she wire it back to Brenda while they were in Mexico? In addition to asking help from his daughter, several days after the murder, Pavott also borrowed his ex-wife's red 1992 Chevy Beretta, which is the vehicle the couple was arrested in. He also researched information online about Argentina, since it doesn't extradite to the U.S. While they were on the run, Pavott would call his daughter, Jana, asking her to send money. He didn't know she was working with the FBI. The most crushing evidence against Pavott was his own letter he wrote the Andrews' daughter. In the letter, he accepted responsibility for the murder of Rob, and he claimed Brenda was completely innocent. Eventually, Brenda and James ran out of money, and on February 23, 2002, Brenda Andrew and James Pavott were arrested in Hidalgo, Texas, while attempting to re-enter the U.S. They both were eventually extradited back to Oklahoma City to stand trial for the first-degree murder of Rob Andrew. Although they were charged together and are co-defendants, Brenda and Pavott were tried separately for the murder of Rob Andrew. James Pavott went first, in what was like a dress rehearsal for Brenda's trial, since the evidence for each was almost identical. Pavott's murder trial began August 25, 2003 in Oklahoma City. In order to receive the death penalty in the state of Oklahoma, prosecutors must prove the death was especially heinous, atrocious, or cruel. They would prove the murder of Rob was just that. The prosecutors focused on the relationship between Brenda and Pavott, the manipulation of insurance documents, and the fleeing to Mexico to prove Pavot was guilty. They filed a document called a Bill of Particulars. It stated, 1, Pavot committed murder for financial gain or the promise of financial gain. 2, the murder was especially heinous, atrocious, or cruel. And 3, the probability that Pavot would commit another criminal act of violence and was a threat to society. All factors which led the state to seek the death penalty. Jurors held the testimony of an Oklahoma City gun shop owner and former Andrew neighbor that sold Pavot a .22 caliber pistol just before the murder. Pavot's own daughter, Jana Larson, testified about Brenda asking him to help kill her husband. Larson testified, quote, "He told me that Brenda had asked him to kill her husband, or if he knew someone that could do it." Prosecutors also showed the jury how Rob managed to change the beneficiary of his life insurance to his children, only to have his signature forged. The state had a handwritten expert testify that Rob's signature to change the beneficiary back to Brenda was forged. Pavot's ex-wife, Sook High, testified that when he was in love, he'd do just about anything for the woman. But the most devastating evidence against Pavot was the confession letter he wrote to Andrew's daughter. In this letter, he admits that he and another person planned and then murdered Rob, and that Brenda had no knowledge and she was innocent. The jurors were very interested to hear this letter, and Pavot signed it Uncle Jim. A second confession surfaced shortly after Pavot's trial began. An inmate that was also facing the death penalty for an unrelated crime wrote a letter to the Oklahoma newspaper, stating he was the one that murdered Rob Andrew. Pavot's judge in the case never allowed this person to testify, however. Then, on September 15, 2003, James Pavot was found guilty for the first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder of Rob Andrew. On October 21, 2003, he was sentenced to death. The state of Oklahoma allows for an automatic appeal in death penalty cases. Pavot filed an appeal, citing 18 points of error in his trial. But this initial appeal was denied by the Oklahoma Court of Appeals on May 9, 2007. The Oklahoma Court of Appeals ruled 5-0 to uphold the conviction and sentence. Then, in June 2017, a 3-judge panel with the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled to overturn part of Pavot's conviction and sentence. In order to receive the death penalty, the state of Oklahoma must prove at least one aggravating circumstance. In the first trial, the state proved the crime was heinous, atrocious, or cruel, but not everyone agreed. The federal court ruled the state did not prove aggravated circumstances. The federal court said that since the medical examiner testified that Rob could have experienced pain, that did not prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that he actually did. Jennifer Miller, the Deputy of Criminal Appeals with the Oklahoma Attorney General's Office, stated that what they basically said was that the state did not, or the Court of Criminal Appeals did not, find the especially, quote, heinous, atrocious, or cruel aggravator in a way to sufficiently narrow it to warrant the death penalty. The federal court also focused on Brenda's 911 call, in which she never described any pain or suffering from Rob. However, Jennifer Miller stated, quote, "You have to have conscious physical suffering or mental torture, and what we had in this case was really both." Her office appealed the overturning of Pavot's conviction. On June 28, 2018, a federal appeals court reinstated the conviction and sentence of death for James Pavot. The court voted 10-3 that the state did in fact prove the crime was heinous, atrocious, or cruel, and they reinstated the sentence of death. James Pavot has exhausted all his appeals, and he will eventually be put to death by lethal injection in the state of Oklahoma when they resume. after her lover was found guilty and sentenced to die for the murder of her husband, Rob, Brenda Andrew stood trial for his murder. The prosecutors portrayed Brenda as a promiscuous, unfaithful harlot that had multiple affairs and many lovers. The state called the friend's husband and the grocery store man Brenda had affairs with, in addition to Pavat. Jury selection began in early June 2004 for Brenda's trial. Both sides together dismissed over 100 potential jurors, in part due to the intense media coverage surrounding the case. Eventually, a 7-man, 5-woman jury was set. The trial would last 6 weeks. Of course, Brenda Andrew pled not guilty, and she maintains her innocence to this day. The prosecution modeled their case a lot like Pavat's. From the second sentence of their opening statements, prosecutors told the jury that Brenda had a boyfriend throughout her entire marriage to Rob. They even claimed she had come on to one of her lover's sons. The state also focused on the relationship she had with the killer, Pavat, the insurance documents they forged, and the fact they took the kids and skipped the funeral of the murdered husband and father. A jailhouse informant named Teresa Sullivan testified she spent 3 months in the same pod in the Oklahoma County Jail with Brenda, and she said Brenda confessed to murder. Quote, "She told me that her and Mr. Pavat killed her husband for the money and the house. She told me she was assured she would get away with it." Throughout the trial, the state never presented any physical evidence of Brenda's sexual prowess. That is, until their closing statements. The prosecution opened and revealed the contents of her suitcase from when she was arrested, including several thong underwear and lace bras. The prosecutor stated in very dramatic fashion, quote, "This is what we found in the suitcase. The grieving widow packs this to run off with her boyfriend. The grieving widow packs this to go sleep in a hotel room with her children and her boyfriend. The grieving widow packs this in her appropriate act of grief." The most shocking evidence that was presented in Brenda's trial was the fact she had somehow opened a life insurance policy for James Pavat. He was probably next for this black widow. The jury deliberated for 7 hours before finding Brenda Andrew guilty of the first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder of her husband, Rob Andrew, on July 13, 2004. 2 days later, she had a sentencing hearing. Brenda's family and 2 children made emotional pleas for mercy, but she was still sentenced to die. Quote, "Obviously, Miss Andrew and her family are extremely disappointed with both verdicts," Greg McCracken, Brenda's defense attorney, said. He also told reporters he was confident Brenda would receive a new trial due to the media coverage. However, prosecutor Greg Greiger was certain that was not an issue and said, quote, "I think Judge Bragg took extraordinary steps to prevent any type of unfair prejudice entering into this jury. There was never any indication from start to finish in this case that the coverage of the case in the media had anything to do with the outcome." He also highlighted the fact Brenda had never shown any remorse or regret for the murder. After she was sentenced, Brenda said in court to the judge, quote, "The verdict which sentenced me to the death penalty is an egregious miscarriage of justice. I'm an innocent woman, wrongfully convicted." In addition, Brenda held a folded white piece of paper, looked at the judge, and said, quote, "I plan to fight for my freedom until the end, and the end is neither execution or imprisonment. It is the complete vindication of my name. God knows my heart, and He will deliver me out of this situation." 3 jurors from Brenda's murder trial also attended her sentencing. 1 juror stated he wanted to see his job through to the end and support the Andrew family. He also explained he wasn't concerned with Brenda's innocent pleas, stating, quote, "With all the evidence that was presented in front of me, I wouldn't change my mind 1 inch. What was done wasn't an accident. It was deliberately done. Assistant DA Greiger also dismissed her claims by saying, quote, Ms. Andrew has shown absolutely no remorse for her criminal actions from day one. It certainly doesn't surprise me that she continues to show no remorse for being found guilty of murder. Another assistant DA in the case, Fern Smith, was somewhat surprised by Brenda, explaining, quote, The fact that she said the jury was wrong in what they did, that it wasn't based on evidence, that her conviction was egregious, was disrespectful to the court and the jury. Greiger also defended the jury, saying they only did what they thought was right. Due to her death penalty sentence, Brenda's judge had to sign a document known as a death warrant. The document is to set the execution date, and it's normally set for 60 to 90 days from sentencing. It's just a formality, however, due to the state's automatic appeals in death penalty cases. In her appeal, Brenda used the prosecution displaying her underwear as a reason to overturn her conviction. The appeals court disagreed, ruling it proved the extent of their relationship. The court did acknowledge there were some mistakes made in the prosecution's portrayal of some evidence, but the majority of the Court of Criminal Appeals found that none of the state's errors would have made the jury vote any differently. On June 21, 2007, the Oklahoma Court of Appeals, in a 4-1 vote, denied Brenda Andrews' appeal. Finally, on April 15, 2008, the Supreme Court also denied Brenda's appeal. She has maintained her innocence throughout, but she, as well as Pavat, have exhausted all their options and are both to be put to death by lethal injection by the state of Oklahoma. Currently, there is not an execution date for either Andrew or Pavat. The state of Oklahoma has not performed any lethal injections since 2015 due to issues with the drugs used and a botched execution they caused. Brenda is the only woman on death row in the state. Both Brenda Andrew and James Pavat remain on death row, awaiting a date to die, for the 2001 murder of Rob Andrew. Thanks, y'all, so much for listening. This is a controversial case due to the death penalty sentences. Brenda Andrew is currently the only woman on death row in the state of Oklahoma. Despite what y'all think of the death penalty, these two are set to receive this ultimate punishment, and their appeals have both been denied. I will say, I think it's fairly rare for someone to receive the death penalty for one, shooting murder, but the state obviously proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt in both trials. And in addition, each case withstood all the appeals. The state of Oklahoma, however, has not conducted any death penalties since 2015 due to issues with the drugs used and a botched execution. Please let me know what y'all think of this case or the death penalty by emailing soonerstatecrimepod@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your comments, and if y'all have any case suggestions, please let me know. Thank you so much to Podcorn and the Dating Confessions with Alicia and Jack podcast for sponsoring this episode. Be sure y'all check them out. All the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to Sooner State True Crime. I'm so grateful for everybody out there. Please leave me a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It's much appreciated. And as always, tip me at paypal.me/crimestate. You'll receive a shout out and a handwritten thank you note. Thank you, and as always, stay sooner safe out there, y'all.